Welcome back to another broadcast of the Word for Life radio program. With me in the studio is the co-host of the broadcast, Dr. Les Olala, and we are rejoined by a guest today, Dr. Wynn Kimbrough. And guys, we are right in the middle. In fact, we're just beginning a new series that we're calling Living Out Our Faith in a Faithless World. And the model that we've kind of talked about a little bit is in Hebrews 11, verse 7, where we talk about Noah. And we spent our last broadcast talking about the context in which someone like Noah would need to live out their faith. And we made some applications to our own life. But I want to get right into the broadcast today. I want to get right back to our topic. And before we actually get to verse 7 and start mining out some of the things that were true about Noah that ought to be true about ourselves, there's actually a verse before verse 7, verse 6, where we see a principle that was actually lived out by another man that becomes really the model that Noah modeled for us, and that's the man Enoch. And so, Doc, I wonder if you could take some time to just walk us through this Enoch principle and pattern that we see in verse 6.
Well, the key word in the Enoch is testimony. He had this testimony that he pleased God. That precedes the statement, without faith it is impossible to please him. Enoch operated on two bases. Number one, God is. Number two, God rewards. And Enoch must have had such a knowledge of his God and such a passion that God took him. What that was all about, we will discover in eternity. But we know this, that he was a pleasure to God.
This verse always encouraged me because it reminded me that it is possible to please God. Some people think, well, God is a father like this and he's got all these demands and on it goes. But can he ever be pleased? He can.
Yes.
Enoch did.
Well,
Noah
did.
The whole chapter on faith. These are people that please God.
Well, that was his testimony. You know, you were talking about testimony a moment ago. I mean, at the end of the day, you can sum up Enoch as a man that made God happy, of whom God approved.
Yeah.
You know, I'd hate to put my life up and say, now, what would my testimony be? I would hope to be that. But really, that ought to be what our life is. It ought to be a life that pleases God. And, Doc, what was it about Enoch that pleased God so much?
He had an absolute confidence that God was who he said he was. But the interesting word there, he had this external witness that he walked in pleasure to God. And I don't know why God chose to translate him, but it may have been to make a statement to the unbelieving world to whom he testified that this God was real.
We all have a mutual friend, and years ago, he used to actually say a word. It was kind of a little thing that stood out in my mind because he said, some people give a testimony, some people stand up and give a testifony. That was actually a convicting reminder that you can say a lot of things, but it may not be real in your heart and life. And I think what you're saying, Dr. O, is a lot of people, whenever God did a real deep move in their heart, they went from a testifony to a testimony. They could testify and say, this is what my God is. This is what my God has done. I took this step. I went back to a family member. I went back to my spouse and made things right. I humbled myself. I went back to an employer and confessed something. I might lose my job. I did lose my job over this. Financially, I wasn't in a position or a condition where I could do this particular thing, but God moved them to do that particular thing. That was a testimony versus a testifony where anybody can stand up in a meeting and say, I got saved when I was 9 years old, and since then I've gone to church and I've done this, that, or the other. That might be, quote unquote, a salvation testimony, but what happened since then? And I think a question you ask pretty regularly is, what has God done in your life in the last week? Where something that was real and genuine about God and that is your testimony of what God is doing or has done.
And I can attest to the power of that question because when I first came and got to know you guys, I can remember sitting on the chapel platform in something that we call the Works of God Mondays. On Mondays, you used to ask the staff and the student body to just give testimonies of what God had done over the weekend. And you would say, what have you seen God do in the last 24 hours that reveals to you that God really is alive? And I can remember sitting next to you sometimes and thinking, boy, I sure hope he doesn't turn around back here and ask us to do that. Because, I can remember being absolutely smitten by that question and literally being driven to my knees. And I think that question was one of the things that God used to begin a process over a period of time in transforming me from the inside, not just throwing a bunch of stuff on the outside and learning a bunch of words that were the common talk in whatever ministry you're in, but really getting down to the heart of me, because I would just remember sitting there going, I don't remember God doing anything for me. I can't remember the last time he's really answered a major prayer. And God was so gracious. I mean, he would do things. But in terms of what I was hearing from the student body or what I was hearing from others, I mean, that slew me.
Well, I think that what we're facing in the United States of America, and I realize there are listeners who are not residents of the United States, but we are facing as a nation right now with the loss of jobs, et cetera, people who are believers who have been comfortable believers and committed as much as they know to be, no desire to run from God, are now being forced to this thing called a life of faith. What do? I was laid off. I lost my job. I've been a corporate executive. My job was cut. I have to sell the home. I have to take the kids out of Christian school. Suddenly, this life of faith becomes a reality because now it is utter dependence. We're not independent anymore. We are absolutely declaring dependence on God. And it's not the fault of a person who has a heart to just please God that he has not had tremendous trials of faith. But when that does come, suddenly they enter a whole nother level of their spiritual walk.
Yeah.
Because they say, now I have to figure out who is God. You remember testimonies when there is a financial provision. We talked about Jehovah Jireh.
Yes.
The God who provides. We know who he is. But a generation that knows only Jehovah Visa has a very hard time making that shift to God as my provider, not plastic as my provider.
Whenever you start talking about this whole idea of a testimony, the testimony is revealed that it is real whenever the test comes. I mean, when it is never tested, it never has the opportunity to become my testimony.
Well, Doc, you used to say a tested person is a trusted person.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's very true. If they've responded rightly, a tested person can get bitter. That person does not fall in the category of being trusted or trustable because his view of God has become so flawed. His anger against God has become a driving force in his mind. But a tested person who responds and says, I trust God, becomes a trustable person.
And he becomes an incredible tool in the hand of God for righteousness.
Yeah. Well, you said earlier about Enoch, that was the whole point. There was something about his confidence and relationship and view of God for the scripture to say he pleased God. I mean, that was his testimony.
There are three people from the creation all the way up through the flood that are said to have walked with God. Adam walked with God in the cool of the evening before the flood. Enoch walked with God, and that's the reason that God took him. I mean, he's singled out in a chapter of death. He's the only one that didn't die, and we're told why that happened, because he walked with God. And then Noah finds grace because he walked with God before his generation. What does walking with God mean? I mean, we talk about that, but what does that actually look like when you put shoes on it?
Well, I believe it's the daily lifestyle, and it goes back to choices. How do we define virtue? I define virtue as holy, moral character based on right moral choices. And I believe Enoch's walking with God was a revelation of Enoch's choices that he was making in his day-to-day, moment-by-moment walk.
And he made those choices because of what he believed.
And in whom he believed
right.
as well. Because the God who spoke, he believed God.
And that's exactly what we just read in verse 6.
As you were talking, I think a lot of people, they are Christians, but they are weak Christians. And you were saying that the strength of Enoch's life was all about his relationship. And you're talking about how could he walk by faith? How could it be said that he walked by faith? How could it be said that he pleased God? That would be in contrast to me, to a lot of people that, you know, they are a Christian, but they are weak in their, what is it? They're weak in their faith.
Yeah.
So when you lose the job, you find out This is where my confidence is. And this is what I'm either going to live by faith, or I'm going to be a weak Christian and maybe even become bitter or angry at God or antagonistic about God didn't do this for me like he used to, or something.
And I think sometimes we think, you know, that for Enoch and Noah, it might have been easy to walk by faith. But it's interesting at the end of verse 6, Enoch believed that God was a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting phrase to me.
Mm-hmm. You see that in Acts 2:42, giving all diligence.
Mm-hmm.
You see that in 2 Peter chapter 1,
mm-hmm.
giving all diligence, add to your faith. That is a pattern set that is to be followed by us. How do we grow onto maturity to be pleasing to God?
I think it's easier to admire people that are diligent than it is to be the person that is diligent. I mean, earlier we were in a side conversation about guitar playing and so on like that, but you can watch a guy that is the premier guitar player in the world, and we've actually had some here at Northland, and you look at them, you admire their skill, their ability, their talent. I could all day long say, boy, I wish I could play the guitar like that. But you know what? I can't play the guitar like that because I don't spend hours and hours and hours and hours a day repeating the same thing over and over again until it's a level of perfection. And I think when you brought that up, Sam, to me that is really important when you talk about what is it to be diligent in seeking the Lord. What does that require?
Well, for Noah, 120 years building an ark.
That was just a small portion of his life.
Yeah.
When we get into that, we realize what that really involved.
Right.
What was that step of faith that was taken? And we see that Enoch had set that pattern. He walked pleasing God. He had that heart of faith. He realized that God was. He realized that God eventually rewards. And when we come to these conclusions before this series is over, we'll be in the life of Paul in 2 Timothy chapter 4, where the identical thing is repeated in the reward factor of Paul's life.
Well, guys, you've set us up beautifully for jumping into the life of Noah in our next broadcast as we continue our series, Living Our Faith in a Faithless World. And certainly, we look at Enoch and we see exactly what you just said, Doc, that he was a man who had a testimony of being pleasing to God because he believed what he believed about God, and that belief drove him to diligently seek the Lord. And that's really at the heart of walking with God. Walking with God is seeking God. And that ought to be our testimony. And it's not easy, but we have example after example after example in the pages of both the Old and the New Testament that assure us and encourage us that we can live this way. And that really ought to be our goal. Until the next time that we're together, may the Lord bless you.